It is time for the Steve Young Show, brought to you by Peter Pan BMW. Come experience the magic at Peter Pan BMW or at PeterPanBMW.com. And also brought to you by Chilton Auto Body, proudly serving the Bay Area's collision and paint repair needs since 1969. Not my idea, Steve.
You know what they say, speed kills. Speed kills. You know, the kryptonite, you were talking about BYU kryptonite. Your kryptonite is speed and throwing a lot of interceptions and timely fumbles. That's not good.
Yeah, and touchdowns that are returned for immediate 6 points, too, aren't good.
Yeah, that's not good either.
Well, you didn't have to wait too long to get the BCS bubble burst. At least it happened early in the season. Now you can just relax and watch the games again.
Yeah, no kidding. In fact, it's like, give us Ohio State or Oklahoma or something, a Big Ten school, Michigan. But these SEC schools, hit them off the schedule quickly.
Oh, brother. I thought they had the team to do it, and then all of a sudden I saw 30-14.
I know.
It was just good night now.
Yeah, no. So you gotta pick all the angles. You can't be giving up big interceptions and fumbles down the five. I mean, you just can't do it. So much for that.
Did you watch the whole game?
I did. I saw it. Yeah.
Wow, you stayed with it to the end?
Well, yeah. No, it's just the ugliness of it all. Because you think about it, for a team like that, we win that one, and things get really interesting. So I think that was kind of fun to think about. It was like,
no, absolutely. Because I think you have TCU and Utah at home.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. So, hey, look, the interesting news that comes out of it is that pretty clearly the Mountain West, because of what they're doing kind of interconference at the BCS level, that there's a whole formula where in the BCS, if a certain conference wins certain games out of conference and others aren't doing it, the ACC being the one that's not doing it right now, that there's actually a reconfiguration that takes place every 4 years. And then everyone says, well, they're not going to kick the ACC out of it. And so what will happen is they'll just expand it and allow that Mountain West to come in. So I actually suspect if TCU, Utah, and BYU keep doing this, kind of winning games every year out of conference, that inevitably they'll just include them in the BCS, which would be nice.
The problem is Bronco doesn't go with Mendenhall. It should be Bronco and then with some, like, Eastern European name, like Nagurski, obviously. Bronco Mendenhall. Sounds odd.
Doesn't ring true?
No, I don't think so.
All right, well, we'll get over it.
let me ask you about Matt Millen. Like, Tom and I really like Matt, and it's good to see him on the show with you. I think he does a great job. In fact, before he took the job with Detroit, I really thought he was the best analyst out there, even better than Madden. I mean, wit, knowledge. And now he seems somewhat subdued, and Tom and I were wondering, is he subdued because he feels like after laying such an egg for such a long period of time, he wouldn't be appropriate to come on TV yucking it up? Or is it because he maybe is just kind of beaten down by the last 7 or 8 years of experience?
Yeah,
or
no,
he just got older?
No, I think, well, he is older. I called him Grandpa. He looked like you let the gray come out, and I was like, Matt, I played with you. You're making me look bad. But I think he's beat up. There's no question about it, and he has a lot of pride. He really does know football. I mean, as far as being able to understand the game, especially from defensive linebackers, a lot of linebackers know their kind of positions, and they kind of know coverages and some odd things. But he really does understand football. That's why he was such a good analyst, and that's why everyone thought he'd be a great football executive. But it didn't go well. So
did you ever talk to him about that? Because Tom and I are just perplexed. I mean, it seems maybe those skills aren't transferable. Obviously, they're not. But how could a bright guy who knows the game so well do such abysmally poorly?
You know what? I'm going to get that story through the year here. I got a little of it last week, and I'll keep getting a little bit in time. But I think that what we're going to find out is that there was a lot of learning curve and then a lot of Detroit, some things that were unique to the wonderful experience of being in Detroit, and then just some bad, just some really bad decisions that came back to haunt him, and then things that's kind of, so I think it's a combination of things. But I ask me that maybe in 3, 4, 5 weeks when I've been with him a little more.
Okay.
I more context.
I think in every sport, Steve, the guy that's that can evaluate talent, and that's something that I've never really been able to figure out, even on the basketball side. When somebody is good at the NBA level, I can tell you why they're good, what they do, but trying to watch a guy, unless we're talking super elite talent, trying to figure out like what a guy does, how does that translate to the next level? And in football,
I told you LeBron was a sure thing.
Good job, Ralph. You're spot on that one.
Thank you.
I liked Kobe as well, but you know, like a wide receiver, for instance, can you catch? Of course, you can catch. If you couldn't catch, you wouldn't be playing wide receiver. You'd be playing cornerback. But I mean, is he smart? Does he know the difference between man and zone? Can he sit down? Can he get on the same page with the quarterback? Can he beat the coverage? You know, on the line of scrimmage. Does he have good separation? Does he run good routes? I mean, I think guys that can do that, and I think that's a great intangible, because I don't know if that's something you can learn. Either you have an eye for talent or you don't have an eye for talent, and if you don't, you're screwed.
Yeah, I it's one of those. It's the X factor. You love that one, right?
I
it's
love the
ability.
X factor.
Because you can't explain it. It is kind of an innate ability. I call it interpersonal skills. The human quotient, right? Being able to sit down with somebody. The great coaches have it. The Parcells, the Bill Walsh, the Lavelle Edwards. He could sit down with anybody and kind of see their human potential in you and know whether you're good or bad at something. And those are the guys that excel in football, because there are a lot of kind of meatheads in football that don't have that talent. They have other talents, but it's not that one.
I think so, I could sit down with somebody and talk to them for a while and be able to get a pretty good feel for their character, but not for their physical ability. I mean, you look at Mike Williams. I mean, I don't know how Tom and I just watched him, you know, play at the college level, and it was like a man amongst boys. And then,
And I think that's hard. That's the hard part about, because I stand back like you, Tom. I think to myself, man, if I ran a team, I think I know talent. Mm-hmm. I think I know. When Jim Druckenmiller came out the first practice, I turned to Marty and said, you can send him back. He's not going to work, you know. But then what do I know? Because the truth is, I've said that about other people, and I was wrong. So it's like you think you can do it, and you think that if I had that job, I could bring people in, watch them work out, talk to them, meet with their family, and I would be able to tell you, I see this kid is making it. But I guess what I'm hearing from people is that you do all that, and you're also pretty good at people skills, and you kind of have that human quotient, and you still doesn't go right, because people go pro, and the pro game is so much more demanding. You know, college is so much rah-rah alumni, you know, win one for the Gipper kind of fun and games. And my memory of, I said this before, my memory of college football is everybody's open, and my memory of pro football is nobody's open. So it's just a whole another ball of wax. Maybe guys go pro and it overwhelms them.
Well,
even though you've done all.
What about J.J. Stokes, Steve? Because that was a guy that was a man amongst boys at the Pac-10 level, and Pac-10 is known for having very good skill position players, you know, defensive backs. A lot of those guys get drafted, and he ate those guys alive. Niners trade up, get him at number 10. You played with him. I mean, what was it about J.J.? And he wasn't a complete bust, but he wasn't worthy of the number 10 pick. I mean, he had a decent NFL career.
11 million signing bonus.
Yeah, what was it about him that his skills didn't translate from the college level where he dominated to the pros where he was just another guy?
I think, you know, football, I mean, kids, it starts happening at 8 years old when kids start playing football. And some kids immediately put the helmet on and go, whoa, I don't like this. And then some kids play peewee, and then they play high school, and that's pretty good, and the girls like me, and then they go to college, and that was pretty fun. So I'm telling you, the pro game has a way of kind of deciding, do you really love this game? Because if you don't love it, it'll kind of force you out, even though you don't even notice it. Like, you don't even realize that you're kind of self-opting out, because the game itself is just not an absolute passion for you. And the guys that have the passion and actually have the talent as well are the stars of the league. That's why Patrick Willis is so good. Why is Sean Hill excelling? Because they have that kind of innate, I love this game. You know, I put the helmet on and I actually feel more comfortable and more at ease and more myself when I have the pads on than when I don't.
What is your gut feeling about how Crabtree would do?
Crabtree. You know, you got a sense that a guy that had that innate desire couldn't sit, you know? I mean, I don't know. I just go from personal experience. When I was in the USFL now, I signed that contract, played a year and a half, and now the USFL was going to go down. And so it was summertime. And I said, well, geez, I don't want to wait till it officially goes down so that I can have the contract, you know, that I don't have to pay my way out of the contract. I got to go play now. I have to play. I can't wait. I got to get to the NFL. And in fact, I have to hurry to the Buccaneers, because that's really important to get to the Buccaneers. And so I paid, at least $1 million or more to buy my way out of the contract so I can go play football in the NFL. I couldn't wait. I had to go. Now, looking back, I kind of chuckle. You know, it's like, well, did you have to go right then? Could you wait 6 months? But I think that if you have that innate desire that, look, I love this game. I'm going to play it regardless. Then I don't think you can sit. I think that's just from my own personal experience.
I told Ralph a little while ago, Steve, that I'm toward the back of the Romo bandwagon now. I said I thought he was one of the top five quarterbacks in the league at some point last year, and I'm about a shove away from being off the wagon completely just because some of the stuff that he does on the field.
No way he's in the top five.
I mean, I think
all.
Well, he does some of the dumbest stuff out there. The what were you thinking throws, but does it help him or does it spur him on to greatness that Aikman, Smith, Dorsett, all the great Dallas players, I shouldn't say all of them, but great Dallas players of years gone by are cracking this guy. How much harder does it make his job knowing that these guys are saying, you know, this guy shouldn't be a superstar yet. He didn't really understand what it was like to be the Dallas quarterback. He's not a leader. He doesn't grab guys and hold them accountable. Does it make it tougher? Or does it, you know, make his belly burn, so to speak?
You know, it's funny. When T.O. was there, I think they kind of hid this stuff a little bit. And I think that's why they essentially let T.O. go, because they had to. I always felt like the Dallas Cowboy locker room the last 2 years was devoid of leadership. And the theory was that there were leaders in there that were squelched by just the innate nature of what T.O. brought and just took all the oxygen out of the room and wouldn't allow some of the younger players to take on leadership roles. You know, see Jason Witten, see Tony Romo. But the problem is now that he's gone and now it's kind of left to stark reality, and you see these first couple of games, and especially this one last week, that's Tony Romo at what you – you know, whenever you have a big game with Dallas, what do you worry about? Is Tony going to throw up that 3 or 4 pick game? Is he going to – what's he going to do? And there's guys around the league that are like that. And I don't know – and I've said this before many times. When I played – and believe me, I don't remember everything I did well, right? I remember most of the things I did. I remember when I messed up. So I'm not trying to tell you, everything went well. But I will say that when you get into a ball game and you've thrown a couple picks early, you say to yourself, I can't keep doing this because then I'm not giving my team, who's a pretty dang good team, a chance to win the football game. I'm taking it away from them if I keep this up. So I'm going to pull back. I'm not going to make any kind of wild throws or, you know, I'm not going to take many chances so that I don't take this opportunity away from my team. And for some reason, Tony doesn't seem to understand that. It's like, look, I'm just going to keep winging it, and hopefully something good will happen. But the problem is just you can't be flippant with the football. You cannot be the headline constantly of why your team's losing. Tony Romo did that, and that's why they lost. You can't be – forget about what number quarterback you are in the league. I'm top five, or I'm going to be a super – it doesn't really matter. You cannot play long-term in the NFL if that's the storyline. And so to me, he has been around long enough, played long enough, to do exactly what I'm explaining that experienced quarterbacks do. I'm not going to be that guy today, and I'm not going to steal it from my team. I'm actually going to make sure that I get out of the way a little bit and let this great team kind of carry me for a little while. And I just think that's experience. That's just maturity. It's just, you know, and some guys, to my mind, they don't ever get that. They just keep winging it. It's just, I'm a swashbuckler. That's my ball game. Take it or leave it. And that puts people in a lot of – that's going to put Jerry Jones in a bind if that keeps going on.
And then also
when you're not winning in December and January, and that becomes a thing. You know, every quarterback has mountains to climb. Every time you get a young quarterback, there's going to be things he hasn't done. Oh, he didn't win a playoff game. Oh, he didn't, all those things. You have to remember Peyton Manning when he didn't win a Super Bowl. There's all that going on. So the fact that Tony hasn't won a Super Bowl or taken his team deep into the playoffs, that's not the end of the world. But if you start getting a theme that, oh, here comes December, January, Tony doesn't play well, that's not going to work either. So I just think he's putting himself in a jam. I always thought the Jessica Simpson thing made it even harder. I'm not saying you can't date whoever you want, but just know that what you're doing is making your job harder. Or Phillip Rivers in San Diego, when he's chirping at other, you know, the defense and yelling at the crowd, I always say, Phillip, it just makes everything harder. You know, it's hard enough as it is. I always thought that football and playing in the NFL was as hard as anything in the whole world. So I think Tony's put himself in a little bit of a jam. And now when Tony Dorsett says something, you know, the last thing you need is Troy Aikman to say something. Now you're putting yourself in a real jam.
I know how much you enjoy good quarterbacking skills, and so you just feasted on Peyton Manning on Monday night. I mean, that was one of the weirdest games I've ever seen. You know, when Indy runs, 13 plays in the second half and has the ball for less than a quarter of the game. And as you said, the Dolphins did everything perfectly. They played a perfect game, and they still came up short because they didn't have a big play guy. And every time Manning got his hands on the ball, he provided the big play.
It was awesome. I honestly, and it proved out. I mean, no one's ever, that's not been done before. That's the fewest amount of minutes of a time of possession in a football game and still winning. And it was amazing because he was so efficient. And the thing with Peyton is he doesn't miss a read. There's not a play that happens, and then I missed it. I thought it was man. Or, Dallas Clark was open. I was looking the other way. I mean, he's on top of the game. Remember how we talked about being ahead of the game?
Right.
It's fun to watch him. It's fun to watch him because and here I am from the sidelines. I'm up above so I can see a little bit better, and I'm watching the game, and I can see that here comes man, or here comes blitz, or here comes things, and Peyton's down on the field doing exactly what I would do from the stands. You know, I mean that's if you ever stood on a football field behind, you know, literally at the field level and watched the game, you now really can come to appreciate how hard it is to really not miss anything. And so that's why, you know, I wish I was 6'6" like Peyton. Peyton's not 6'4". He's 6'7" if he's 6'5". So, I mean, he's a massive guy. And so he just doesn't make many mistakes. I love watching him play because you know how much I appreciate people that put the time in. Half of the battle in football, I said this on the air the other day, going to law school. Law school was, you know, chicken feed compared to the student, the in-classroom study and memorization and film time and work that quarterback takes. And I learned that from Joe, and I don't know where he learned it from, but the truth of the matter is you can't be any good at this game big time, long term, unless you put the time in. And Peyton very obviously and very early put all that time in, and now he's just reaping all the benefits. It does get to a point where towards the end of your career, as long as you can stay healthy, it's a little bit like shooting fish in a barrel.
And I want to get to the 49ers, Steve, but just quick, Tom and I were both flabbergasted. I thought, you know, I'm not sure about Matt saying that at 0-2, Miami can make the playoffs, but I think probably at 0-2, Tennessee can. But how did they get beaten? I mean, Texas ran up the yardage on them, and, you know, the Houston got almost nothing against the Jets the previous week. Then they beat the Titans at Tennessee. How did that happen?
I don't know. I didn't see the game, but that's why I told you about opening day. Opening day's chaos. It's the most, like, I hated opening day because everybody's a hero. You go in to play these defenses and play the Falcons on opening day, it was like playing the Steel Curtain of Pittsburgh in 76. I mean, everybody's insane, and they're playing out of their shoes. And, you know, it's like everything for opening day is a little bit awkward. I would even say the first half of opening day. By the time the halftime came around, everybody kind of took a breath and you got back to a little bit of normalcy. But that first game, a lot of things happen, and you want to make decisions off of it. Oh, this is where we're – that's the trajectory of who we are. And a lot of times it's just not. And so people settle in, and you start to see the real team. I thought Houston was a lot better than opening day. They were pretty sad. And so I think that's – that game I learned more about the Houston Texans than I did the Tennessee Titans. And I didn't see it, but I saw the highlights and talked to some people who did.
What about the 49ers? In terms of Sean Hill, it seemed like Singletary had a little more confidence in him. They had him throwing out of the end zone. And do you think he can become a guy who can quarterback the 49ers for the next 5 years and take him to the postseason?
Well, you know what? Think of Tom Brady. I'm not saying Sean's Tom Brady. What I'm telling you is remember when Tom Brady came in for Drew Bledsoe? I don't know if you remember the moment, but I do. And I thought to myself, oh, man, the poor Patriots, you know, had this top-line quarterback for so long. Here comes a kid that's just been sitting around for long. And I'm not saying it's going to be lightning in a bottle, but people can be late bloomers. People can, with the proper opportunity and kind of, you know, kind of things coming together, can really blossom. And so, you know, the more...
But it's rare that somebody sits for 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, and so it does happen. And so, you know, the kid is blossoming, you know, and what's the upper level reaches of his game? It's hard to say. You don't know. You should play 12 games of his career. Played pretty solidly. But I think the coach is now saying, to himself, you know what, more than I have, you know, ultimate confidence in Sean, I think he's starting to say, I have really a lot of confidence in this defense. And this defense can get me out of some jams, and I think we can probably do a little bit more offensively and figure that we can get the ball back. And that's a really nice place to be. So I'd love to see Sean kind of get to aired out a little bit, but I don't want to do it at the cost of the kind of nice gains that they're making as a team right now. Because the last thing you want to do is get loose in the axle, you know. And as soon as you get things going the right direction, we're 2-0, then all of a sudden, okay, now we're going to go to the Super Bowl, and then you start flying around, and pretty soon you go on a 4-game skid. That's why Mike's so good, right? Because he's the perfect guy to kind of hang in there and not get too far off of outside the guardrails.
How did they do in Minnesota? I'm sorry.
What's that?
How did they do this week?
That is a great test. I thought last week was a great test, but then, you know, they kind of throttled them. So maybe the test is the fact that they're just better than we thought, or better than anybody thought. But this one's going to be tough, right? Because they're coming up a really, I think, a pretty solid defense and an offense that's going to not make a lot of mistakes. This one's, you win in Minnesota, people around the league will start saying this is no fooling around anymore. So this is kind of a big game, kind of a statement in that way, where you can get a lot of people's ears perked up if you go into Minnesota and win this game.
And before I run, I know we're real late. Just real quick, if you can answer this quickly. Brian's shaking his head, but that's okay. He does it all the time. It's kind of cute, actually. How long does it take you as
a
quarterback?
Shaking his finger now.
How long does it take you as a quarterback to understand every play doesn't have to be a win?
I think that should be somewhat innate by the time you get out of college, for sure. You know, you do not have, I mean, there's people that are over-competitive. And I keep saying things about Joe, but I got to be honest with you. I learned that from Joe too. Joe was great at competing and being an ultimate competitor at the right time. And then there's other times you just say, hey, you know what? This one's not the time to really kind of. And some people don't know when to stop. They just compete at everything and every. You ever have a guy that raced you to the car and wanted to race you eating and, oh, look at me, I got more quarters in my pocket than you. You're like, dude, you've got to chill. You've got to relax and realize that. Not everything in life is a competition, and it's not every time you got to go with your A game. And so, I think that should be so, there's a little bit of learning curve there, but people should come out of college with a good sense that, look, if I'm one of those guys, they're probably not going to make it as a pro.
Yeah. Hey, good luck at Colorado State this weekend. Big bounce back game for the Cougs. No, I saw that defense, no speed. You should have a field day.
Are you guys, what are you, eighth in the Pac-10 right now? What is it?
Haven't had a Pac-10 game yet, for crying out loud.
They have the wrong stoops.
We could be, though. That's a possibility.
All right. We'll run the table. We'll see you in the Rose Bowl.
I'm still hanging on to the Las Vegas
it's
Bowl
the
of
right
last
place,
year, baby.
But the wrong stoops.
We're headed for the Las Vegas Bowl with a bullet. This is brutal.
All right, Steve. Have a good week,
Take
man.
Care of the kids.
We'll play Arizona, the eighth team in the Pac-10 in the Las Vegas Bowl. And go have fun with Brent Jones, will you?
Oh, brother. Well, Steve, take it easy, man.
Thanks, Steve.
Las Vegas Bowl with a bullet. Great.